Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It is the Anfield Wrap. I am Neil Atkinson, and with me I have Rob Gutman, Harriet Pryor and Paul Cope to talk about, in the first place, Manchester United 3, Liverpool 2. But matters arising from that, with reference to Liverpool's centre-half question, and also looking ahead to the game against Tottenham Hotspur. But we will start with the football match that has just occurred. And Rob, watching the game back, watching it at the time, it felt like Liverpool were better around the Manchester United penalty area than they were around the Manchester United penalty area last week, and they were around the Burnley penalty area, especially on Thursday. In the end, it just felt like a bit of a soft way to lose.
Yeah, we did. We looked more like Liverpool, I thought. I came out of it, you know, you go by your, I don't know, a fair summary is your own intuitive feel at a final whistle. And I suppose it's affected by the fact that it's the FA Cup and not the league, so we're not as invested in it, but I felt okay. You know, as I've said to you before, I listened back to the post-match show a bit, and there was all that, oh, just don't like being beaten by them. I didn't cross my mind that it was them. It's all about us and our rehabilitation now, and I thought us looking like Liverpool was the important thing. What encouraged me most is, you're right, yes, we did look lively around the box, although against them a week ago I thought we looked lively around the box in spells. What I liked was the confidence around the box. I thought that was better.
Very much so.
And, Klopp was beginning to get irritated by the question in all his press conferences. Is it about confidence, Jürgen? Is the confidence coming back? Well, it is obviously the elephant in the room. It is the thing that needs to come back, because it is the only thing that separates the best football team in the world from being this ridiculous football team that we don't know where it ranks in the world at the moment. So the confidence is the key element. But when Liverpool score that first goal through Mo, for minutes afterwards, you could just see us looking like Liverpool again. And for a moment there, I thought we might actually score two or three. It wasn't to be. But even again, when we get it back to 2-2, you think for a few minutes there's a bit of confidence. There's the point when Mo gets played in again. I think that's the decisive moment in the whole match, by the way, and when he doesn't finish. But in those moments, I thought, the confidence is back here. You can quickly see how this could get very, very much better very quickly. And that might be overly optimistic, but I felt I could see it. That's why at the end of the game, disappointed, but a bit happier in a funny sort of way.
As part of the whole thing, Harriet, Liverpool concede three. But at all three, at the very moment where they concede, you feel watching the game as though they're the better side. And that speaks volumes for, firstly, United's resilience and also how quickly they transition, especially for the first goal. But on the whole, that's, again, one of the reasons why you can be frustrated. But like Rob, you can also be buoyed up. Liverpool, in all three of those moments and those periods where they do end up getting punished, they do look the better side.
Yeah, definitely. And I think... I'm unmuted. Yeah, definitely. I think there was definitely a lot of positives to take away from it. I thought the fullbacks were playing a lot higher again. Trent looked like he was getting involved in more of the attack than we've seen in recent weeks. I thought Firmino had a good game, obviously his assists and everything like that. And, you know, Milner, he was a good influence coming into the game. And like you said, it just seemed like we got caught out. But I think that was kind of a pattern in the match, that we just caught out a few too many times. And I don't want to go into any attack on any individual players, because ultimately it's not Reece Williams' fault. He shouldn't be playing in that side. You know, it's not him as an individual. It's just the situation that we found ourselves in. So, yeah, he got caught out. I think, you know, we know now that he hasn't perhaps got the pace at the moment. I thought, the thing is, I thought generally he didn't look bad. I thought, you know, during the game he had good spells and he actually looked quite solid. It was just those moments that he got caught out. And I think that just comes from a lack of experience, a lack of playing in this sort of standard of team. I think you put him in a lower side Premier League team at the moment, he wouldn't actually look out of place. But when you're playing, you know, in the Premier League champions and you've been slotted in alongside Fabinho, who's also not obviously a natural centre-back, you're not learning from Van Dijk, you're not learning from someone who's played there for years. So, yeah, I think, you know, I don't want to sort of say it was his fault because it wasn't, you know, teams lose the game, but he just did look like he got caught out a bit. But, yeah, I think there are a lot of positives to take from the match. I think as well, you know, Fabinho is still sort of tackling like he's playing in midfield a little bit, and, like, you know, he gave away that foul, and you can argue whether it was a foul or not, but, you know, you've got to be a bit more careful when you're around the box and in dangerous areas. But, yeah, like Rob, I'm going to try and be positive and take some positives out of the game. I thought we did look a bit more like the Liverpool that we've been used to, and it was just nice to see a few goals at the end of the day, wasn't it?
The flip side, Paul, is the hard luck story aspect of it. Like, I don't particularly want Liverpool to get into a situation where every week we're talking about hard luck stories. Sides that play us should be the ones who talk about hard luck stories. That's what I'm aiming for from a Liverpool side. And it is a blow to lose to them when we deserve better. You know, I think it is. I can understand how people do take it a bit badly, you know, firstly because there could have been a trophy towards the end of it. I don't think it's a massive blow to be out of the cup, looking at when the fifth round game falls and the fixtures we've got around that period. I don't think that that's awful. But ultimately, you know, Liverpool have now faced Manchester United twice in back-to-back weeks, and United have got the result they came for on both occasions. And us feeling a bit sorry for ourselves, or feeling like if the ball bounces a bit better, it may be an understandable position, but it's still not good enough for a side that wants to be where Liverpool is.
Yeah, I think that's right. Ultimately, I think it's another case of, it's more than one thing can exist at the same time. It's fine for us to say that and say it's not good enough. We want to be beating Manchester United, whether it's home or away. And it's all right to look at all of the other things as well, which are, you know, they're in the form of their life. And we're in the worst patch we've seen for years. And even in that context, when they've got us at the best time they could ever have found us to play us twice in a week, and we've met them at the worst time to play them, we drew at home, we didn't get beaten, and it's not like they came and demolished us. They had a couple of big chances, we probably edged the game. And then, you know, at Old Trafford, if it wasn't for, I'm going to defend Reece Williams probably more than most on this, and Harriet already started it. If it wasn't for three big mistakes, potentially four big mistakes, because there are arguably two senior pro mistakes for the last goal. Thiago, I saw people saying this to me on Twitter last night. I hadn't really noticed it watching it, but watching it back this morning, Thiago does duck under the shot, duck under the free kick. I've seen your post-match article. Couldn't agree with you more. For me, that is a goalkeeping error. If you concede a goal at that side, when you've set up the wall the way you've set it up, that's your goalkeeper. Love him to bits. Think he's brilliant. Same for Thiago. Senior pro mistakes. Same with the first goal. I think if that ball drops over the head of, and we've literally seen this, drop over the head of Trent or Gomez, we're saying big mistake by a youngster there, shows their inexperience, it was always going to drift over their head, they should have read it better, should have just dropped in. If Milner doesn't try and head that ball and he just drops in, they don't score that goal. And we're just all focusing, and for understandable reasons, on the Reece Williams one, because we all want a centre-back. So it's easier to say, of course we need a centre-back, look at what Williams has done. I thought Williams had a reasonably good game in the context of everything. And with all of that, going back to the question, even with all of those things taken into account, we drew one and lost one narrowly against Manchester United. If we replayed those two games in a month's time, I would put a nice big bet on the fact the results would be different.
To come back to you on the Williams stuff, Paul, I'm more to sort of drop it over the right-sided channel there. We've talked for 2 years that Liverpool get targeted on the right-hand side of the defence, and in the past it's been because you've got Van Dijk and Robertson on one side, you've got Trent and Gomez on the other. Where are you going to target? Well, you're not idiots. You're going to choose to target there. One of the problems for Williams, and he is very much at fault for the second goal. He should just do better. That's not to do with anything else. That's just not connecting with the ball. So let's just be clear on that. But one of the problems Williams has, and I think Trent has had and is continuing to have, and it's almost separate to, but it's part of his issues, I think, going forward. Before we even get to Williams, it's not easy being Trent, because he can't work out where his starting position should be, because he knows that Williams is going to be relentlessly targeted, and in this instance, by Marcus Rashford, not by Dwight McNeil, but by Marcus Rashford. And Rashford just sits there, second half of the first half, over and over and over again, doesn't track Trent when he goes, just knows, I'll make myself available for the counter. And that's a relentless examination on Williams. I don't think he's good enough right now to be playing for us, but that is a relentless examination that he gets, especially in the second half of the first half. And there's none of the support play that you normally have for a Liverpool right-hand side at centre-half. Gomez as Fabinho at 6 and Henderson at 8, or at least as Henderson in there and someone else sitting. And it is relentless what's happening to Williams at the moment.
100%. Couldn't agree more. It was the first time watching Trent. I really, really felt sorry for Trent in this game. And we all know his confidence has dipped, his form's not good. But there were so many occasions in that first half where he'd made a forward run and then the ball broke the other way and he turned round, and it's like during muscle memory, he turns around, he just expects to see a massive captain standing there, a big 6 foot Jordan Henderson going, "Trent, stay where you are, lad. I'll get this and just knock it back to you." And instead, he kept doing that thing that it reminded me of playing five-a-side, when you've made the run and then you realise you've lost the ball and you have to put your head down to sprint back, because it's like, I haven't got the energy for this. And he must have had to, I'd love to see the sprint stats, and he was basically just doing shuttles for that entire first half because of what you've just said. At the same time as that, you've got Williams exposed in the same place, and it felt to me, it very much reminded me, it might have been something you wrote that reminded me of this, that I remember, do you remember when Gerrard said about, I think it must have been Sturridge and Suarez, if you want to go 2v2 against them, all the best.
Yeah.
And it just reminded me that that's pretty much how we set up now in defence. We've basically created a side where we go to the opposition, if you want to go 2v2 against our centre-backs, all the best. Because we've got this lad who drops in, and behind them, we've got the world's best goalkeeper, probably, in the top two or three, if not the best. So all the best. And it looked like at Old Trafford, we've gone, do you know what? If we want to recover our attacking prowess, we need to say to Trent, get back to doing that, mate. And the problem is, Reece Williams is not Joe Gomez, and he's not Virgil van Dijk, and he can never be expected to be. So when you say to Marcus Rashford, 2-on-2, all the best, he goes, oh, okay. You want me to run at Reece Williams? And you're like, yeah. And this, the knock-on effect of this, we know that we've talked round and round about all of this. I understand why Klopp did it. If it was me, I'd probably keep doing the same thing now, whether you've got another centre-back to play in there or not. But you're going to expose that part of your team, and that's why I've got a lot of sympathy for Williams.
I agree with what everyone said, that it's harsh to put this on Williams, and it's a red herring to put this on Williams. Where its problem is, well, it's not a problem. It is a problem. The context is that Liverpool are playing the most inexperienced and centre back with the scantest of CVs in virtually the history of the frigging football club, in a match against the top of the table team, as Paul says, in really, really good form. I was just trying to think back. I think Graham Souness in the 92-93 season, or 91-92 season, faced a massive defensive crisis, and we had a player called Nicky Tanner playing centre back. And I remember everyone going, I think we bought him in the summer from Bristol Rovers, who were in the third division, and he was about 24. He was a journeyman before he was even 20, I think. And you go, wow, we've really dropped that. We're putting a lad with this level of inexperience at centre back. And I was thinking, Nicky Tanner would be a lot higher profile in relative terms today than poor Reece Williams, who was turning out for Kidderminster last season. It wasn't just that we're missing Gomez and Van Dijk. We can't emphasise this context enough. We were missing Gomez, Van Dijk, their cover, Matip, and we were missing the midfield cover's cover, Jordan Henderson. So he's somewhere down, is he fifth, sixth? I don't know, in the scale of people we could pick. It was, I'm not saying it's as, it would be very unfair to say it's like playing with 10 men, but it's like playing with 10 and a half men. You know, it's like playing with a competition winner. Now, that's, so I'm saying this and it sounds terribly disrespectful to Rhys Williams, but he shouldn't be expect. I think he's playing at a far higher level in terms of his actual performance than we can have expected of him. I think on the ball he was really, really good. But we are handicapped here, and it needs to be keep being emphasised.
But on that, Harriet, what happens is that there's just endless encouragement. And that's what I found difficult to watch from a Manchester United point of view. You're doing this thing and it's working and it's going to keep working and nothing's changing to stop it from working. And when you are, when you, and this is what I almost mean, it's like a massive carrot that's dangled on an area of the pitch, a big red arrow to Manchester United before a ball's kicked, but then as the balls continue to be kicked, if you attack here, you will find yourself to be able to find a way through. Not one time out of 10, but 5 times out of 10, 6 times out of 10, and that is a problem for Liverpool.
Yeah, absolutely, and I just don't know, looking forward, what the sort of solution can be. I know, you know, Henderson, we haven't even got him to put in that match because he's not fit. I don't know the extent of his injury, but even when he does play centre-back, it just brings the whole team back, so it's not like that's a permanent solution. You can't just keep putting Fabinho and Henderson in centre-back and expecting the rest of the team to play on as normal, because it doesn't happen. So obviously we know Matip can't play 2 games a week, and when Champions League is coming up again in the next couple of months, we know that's not going to work. So it is kind of like, well, what does come next? Can you just keep having this player on the pitch that is going to get exposed? Do you just hope that he has enough time to work with Klopp on how to sort of stop that happening? You know, you can't just expect him to just turn around as a player in a month and gain all this experience that he just doesn't have. So, you know, and I think, like, his press conference before the match, Klopp was for the first time just sort of saying, I can't do anything if I haven't got the money. And they're saying, you know, you can't buy anyone, then what can I do? That's how it's always worked. I don't know why anyone thinks I can just say click my fingers and expect a new centre-back to turn up. So I think it is looking like very unlikely that we are going to sign another centre-back, so we are going to have to find a more permanent solution. I just don't know at the moment exactly what that is, and I think that is why people and fans are just finding it a little bit difficult to be positive and find a way out and find a way forward without having this permanent solution.
Rob, the concern is the extent to which the issue is systemic, and that it's all, yes, the problem is that it's hurting the system, therefore it is systemic. Everybody is missing someone, and every aspect of it is missing someone. This isn't as simple as you've just sort of listed before when you go down, but also part of that is moving people around. It isn't just clicking one piece in and out of place. Trent is missing the security blanket that gets wrapped around him that allows him to push forward with a fair degree of abandon. He still works, but a fair degree of abandon. And on top of that there, you know, you have a decision to make then as to whether or not you change the way in which you want your system to operate. And you could have done that during the game as well. And it is worth saying that coming out in the second half, Klopp's not a stupid man. You know, he knows he could sit someone in front of Williams, could make it a little bit easier for him. But I think chooses not to and wants Liverpool to keep playing because he thinks that's his way home. And he is nearly encouraged. Liverpool do nearly make it 3-2, as you said earlier on. You know, I think all of this, it is a fine line thing. But if you are going to commit to Liverpool's system, as Paul says, part of that is doing what you're doing at centre half and at right back and in front of those players.
Yeah, all that's true, right? But then I'm thinking back to a phase, it feels like the golden age of the season, before the West Brom game, and we forgot how to win football matches. I'm thinking of that Tottenham game a couple of weeks before where Reece plays, and we play really well, and 2-1 flatters Tottenham. We could have won that 3-0. And then I'm thinking back to Atlanta where Reece plays, and then there are other games. Of course, that, you know, sometimes we were just about hanging in there and a tougher opponent can expose you. And I understand how the problems within the system create the first roots of the problem, because we saw it at Fulham, we saw it at Brighton, and it happens, and then it becomes a problem, becomes a growing cancer. You're right, but I think there are ways out of it without thinking it requires us just to go, fuck, what are we going to do till they all come back?
I agree.
We don't have to be a 100-point team or a 99-point team. We were quite happily, until the West Brom game, running at a points average where we were going to be an 88-point team. That's with all the problems. So I'm not sure that the systemic thing... Yeah, it's an excuse of sorts, but I don't think it needs to be.
I'm just probably, that's not what I'm saying, Rob. I mean, I think the Atalanta game's a really good example where we do have Williams in there. We are having to set up a certain way, but what we're able to do, not least because we take our chances when they're presented to us, is that we just sort of blow Atalanta away, and I think that's what the manager's doing. The manager's saying,
yeah,
I'm going to commit to the way in which we play. Think about Tottenham. You know, Tottenham do get their goal on the counter at 1-0, but we're much the better side. We're very much on top at 1-0, and if we'd have actually converted that into a bit more pressure, we go 2-0 and Tottenham probably fold and just think, you know what, we get out without getting whacked here, we just want to sit in and go from there. I think the only way out is through, and essentially the only way to do this is to commit to what it is you want to do as a Liverpool team and say, right, well, you know, there's going to be consequences for that, but the consequences are that when we are on top, we've got to convert. And you're quite right to say that. For instance, it sounds really harsh. Salah scores two goals, looks really bright, gets into position for a third. We need him to score that because we need scoreboard pressure on Manchester United. And even at 2-2, I think, you know, we're on top, and it's not like they're getting in again and again by that phase, United, because it's sort of just they lose their freshness and their fitness, and it just sort of stops working for them a little bit. So I think you're right, and it isn't to say it's an excuse. It's just more, it causes a problem for the system, and you've either got to choose between change the system or do the best you can with the system in place. That's what the manager's choices are.
Do you think this? This might sound madly perverse. I do think there's times, maybe games, where you go, let's not upset. The problem is, you saw at United the other week, we upset so many positions to make sure we weren't terribly, terribly vulnerable at centre back. But I almost think as a mental exercise, if you say, look, our centre-backs are Nat Phillips, Reece Williams and Joel Matip, if he's fit. The rest of the team is now going to be perfect. Do you know what I mean? Because they're all fit. The rest of them are virtually all fit apart from Jota. What would that look like? Certainly, I can understand how that might be a risk too far if you're playing City or even United. But I wonder if against the bottom 14, that needs to be... So what I'm saying is you put Fabinho, Henderson and Thiago in midfield.
I think the manager would say, and I think he'd be proven right if you watched them play, that the issue would be how they recycled the ball from the back. Mm. It wouldn't actually be the raw defender. It'd be how the ball moves from that line into the next line of play, especially when the fullbacks go. You know, the number of times last season you saw Gomez play that lovely curved ball into Trent's path from the right-hand side of centre-half position, where Trent's starting position was 25 yards ahead of him. Mm. And then the ball moves him another 5 yards and he's running onto it because Gomez obviously practiced that ball over and over. You're not getting that from Williams, and especially not getting it from Phillips. So we're in a situation where you're already slowed in terms of what you're talking about, which I can see where you're coming from, but you're not getting the ball moving forward quick enough to be able to do the thing that you want us to do.
But against, you're probably right. I'm not going to, because it was a bit of a left field idea.
No, it's not that left field. I'm sure they're all on the table at Melbourne, mate.
Well, yeah. I suppose I'm talking more when you're against the low block where... There's not the impact from what's happening at the very back isn't as significant as it might be in a more open game. I don't know.
I think it's worth. There's a couple of big points in here. One is this is a brilliant thing to say because I get to say something about the past that can never be proven wrong on, which is always a great thing to say about football. I think take everything that's happened yesterday and put Jordan Henderson in centre midfield in the position he usually plays, and we win the game. And I don't think that's such a big stretch. I understand why people are losing their heads, and I understand, especially in the context of where we are in the world, I understand why Liverpool fans are panicking. And I wonder why people have got so little faith in what we've already got and what we've already seen. Jordan Henderson plays in that game, we win. If Jordan Henderson and Matip are back for Spurs, which I've not seen anything to say they won't be, I'm not sure why Henderson was out. I assume Matip was rested. Then I think we have a very good chance of beating Spurs away with the positive signs we saw yesterday. And on the point Rob just made about the centre-backs, if it wasn't for Klopp coming out and basically saying, I want one, we mentioned something on the review last week, Neil, where I'd start thinking when Henderson played centre-back and played the other side, and there was all the stuff about the way Van Dijk's actually like a number 10 in that position, there's an argument, going back to what Rob was saying, I was thinking the same thing, that yes, we looked exposed yesterday, but we're playing against maybe the best counter-attacking side in the league. Them and Spurs may probably competing for that title. Other than United, Spurs, City, maybe Everton, maybe Leicester. So five or six teams. We're going to have the most of the ball. And there is an argument that even everyone fully fit, you're better off playing a midfielder in centre-back. I was winding up my mate who's a City fan the other week because Guardiola famously said years ago his dream is to play a team with 11 midfielders in. And I was saying to him, we're getting there quicker than you are. There's an argument that if Henderson's... I think that's maybe what part of the Henderson experiment was. I'd actually say from now on, Henderson has to play in midfield for all of the reasons we've said. But there's an argument to say, play Gini Wijnaldum right side of centre-back because he can recycle the ball better, going back to what Neil was saying. He can play, he can pass, he can press, he can do all the things you actually need the player in that position to do. We've said in the past about getting hung up on the title that the players have. He's a centre-back, he's a right-back. Trent Alexander-Arnold is not a right-back in the traditional sense. Wan-Bissaka's a right-back. Wan-Bissaka is a brilliant right-back. But if we had Trent out and put Wan-Bissaka in our team, you'd take loads out of what we do.
If we had Wan-Bissaka in our squad, we'd play Wan-Bissaka right hand side of centre-half.
100%. That's 100%.
Do you know what I'm surprised? Look, considering the bar at centre-half, let's be honest, is very low at the moment. You know, we've said, you know, you take all kinds of Premier League squad players like Socrates or whoever. Why is James Milner never considered an option? Because
he's got no pace. You got to see that at times yesterday. I mean, moving on into the midfield, Harriet, I thought Milner and Jones when he falls back in there, play well. I thought Thiago and Wijnaldum don't. Thiago battles, but his passing's off. Wijnaldum not keeping it well enough in the final thirds, the start and point for the first goal and how that ended, the first United goal and how that ends up in the back of the net. I thought Milner showed a lot within the middle of the park and grew into it as the game wore on, and I thought he comes out as the overwhelming positive in midfield from a Liverpool point of view.
Yeah, I think Milner coming on just brought a bit more energy and a bit more sort of determination to try and pick up the pace again. I think, like you said, Thiago had a weird game. He looked, I don't know if it's sort of coming off the back of an injury, but he looked quite tired. I thought in the second half he just looked a bit fatigued towards the end of the game. Yeah, I think Jones had a good game as well. I think, you know, that's the thing. I don't think we necessarily played badly. We just got caught out a couple of times on the counter-attack. But I think you also have to look back before this game, and conceding goals wasn't our major issue. It was, you know, scoring them. So I don't think you can just pin it all on what the centre-back's doing for one game, when actually the issue has been we actually haven't been firing in front of goal. Salah hasn't been scoring, Mane hasn't been scoring, Firmino's been way off. So, you know, I think if we're thinking in terms of, like, problems we had before that game, kind of, we saw two goals, so that's a positive. But it is just, it's just easy to focus on just the game that you've just had and think, OK, what was the issues in that game? But actually, like Paul just said, if you had Henderson in there, maybe that wouldn't have happened. So, I don't know.
But going back onto that then, you know, Harriet, the front three, you know, the midfield, as I say, Milner looked really, really bright and looked like he was making very good runs, pulling people about a little bit and all that sort of stuff. But the front three, as part of all that, just felt a lot better. You can't argue. Firmino's general play at times, to me, just felt a bit sloppy. But then the flip side is you can't argue with his creativity over the course of the game. And actually, you can't particularly argue with Salah's finishing either.
No, and I thought actually they sort of looked like they had a bit of motivation back. I think in the past few games they've looked a little bit defeated and a little bit devoid of motivation. They just looked like they were trying to press a bit harder and not try a bit harder, because I'm not saying they don't try hard, but just try different things and be a bit more inventive and creative. And I think as well, you know, matches in the past few weeks, they always have this ability, the front three, to sort of work out exactly where each other are, and they have this sort of, you know, sense where they are at all times, and that's kind of been missing. I thought we did see that back again yesterday. I thought Firmino's through ball really proved that, and a couple of times, you know, we didn't score them, but he was very much aware of where they were and putting nice balls in. Mane, I mean, he didn't sort of see as much from yesterday in terms of assists or goals, but I thought he looked, you know, he came on a bit later on, but I thought he looked better. But yeah, they did look like they were firing better. I just hope that even scoring, although we lost the match, does give them a bit more confidence moving forward into the Tottenham game.
The ball for Salah's goal, Paul, is from Firmino for the first one, is absolutely sumptuous. Milner as well, the dummy for the Salah goal, was tremendous, and his involvement right the way through that move, I think, was interesting. There's a lot of, through the game, there's a lot of what Milner does where he makes runs that aren't picked out, but they make a Manchester United player move. And watching it back especially, I was left thinking that's maybe something we have actually been lacking. Someone who makes a run where it isn't about whether or not he's going to get the ball, but it's what he's doing to the opposition setup. And I think that, you know, the gap is there for when Firmino plays the pass. He plays it to perfection, but you've got to create gaps.
Absolutely, and that is something that's been missing. And it's funny, going back to something Rob said right at the start, it amazes me how few people are prepared to just even consider the idea of confidence as a huge factor in all of this. It's like, it's easier for everyone, and I'm including, you know, top pundits on TV. Just, it's easier for them to write off this entire squad and say it needs breaking up and these are all knackered and it's, you know, you'd never keep them together this long. And not just say, do you know what? In the history of football and elite level sport, when confidence dips, you don't play those passes, you don't make those runs. And this is the difference at that level, especially for the likes of, we've said this in the past, for the likes of Liverpool and Man City, the way we play football, it's all about the system, it's all about those little runs, it's all about the little movements. And at their very best, our entire team's doing it. You see it over and over again when we're brilliant and someone, Firmino is often the one doing it, making a movement that just opens a corridor that then someone can play an incredible pass through. But when you're not confident and when you're just second guessing everything and when you're questioning things and when you think that lad who's usually standing behind me isn't standing behind me, instead of making that 5-yard run, you don't. Mm. You just think, I'll just stand still, I'll be safe. And I think for the past 5 games, we've seen a lot of, I'm just going to stay here, I'll be safe. And that changed yesterday. And for me, again, going back to what Rob said about there's two camps on this. We just don't like losing against Manchester United and the bigger picture. And I'm very much in the bigger picture camp of, for me, I'm fine with it all. That looked like a team that had had a kick up its arse losing its home record in a game it shouldn't have lost, but looked like it was willing to take risks again. I was made up Milner was in the side, especially when Henderson wasn't there, because I felt like we needed a lad who would come in and scream at people and not just at the ref and not just at them, but at his own players. We'd reached a point, I think, where no one wanted to, we mentioned this last week, no one wanted to shout at each other anymore because it's just a bit mean. Like, you don't want to turn around to Trent when his head's so low and bollock him. Well, actually, we need to get back to the point where that's what we're doing. We're angry. We make that run. Someone says, you should have made that movement then. And when the lad goes, yeah, but I'm afraid of X, Y, Z, go, no, just make the movement and we'll sort everything else out later.
Did you see there was an interesting moment just after Salah scores the first goal where Milner, they're all embracing each other, sort of, but Milner all but gets Salah in a sort of face lock and he's talking quite intently at him. I thought that was an interesting sort of piece of on-field coaching. I don't know what he was saying. He was clearly saying something more than, I really enjoyed that goal, do that again. but I thought, yeah, that was the sort of captaincy element that he brings to it, that sort of intensity you're talking about.
On Thiago and Wijnaldum, I mentioned Wijnaldum being the culprit for the first goal, and this is really interesting because on the risk thing, Rob, he makes the run, but when he ends up where he ends up, he should play forward and not play backwards. And so he's made the run at least, and I'm talking about disruptive running, and there's an example of it. So we've got to be careful not to criticise a player, which we're praising another player for, but then he tries the little layoff. I'm sort of looking at it at the minute, and I, you know, if Henderson can get himself back fit, I'd be looking at going to Tottenham with Thiago, Henderson and Milner. Not to say that Genie Wijnaldum should never play for Liverpool again, but I do sort of wonder whether or not he could just do with at least one game, if not one or two games, to clear his head a little bit, get his legs back, and maybe watch a couple of games and begin to think about where he fits in.
Yeah, before the game, we were all trying to second guess Klopp. I felt the two who've played a lot in the last, post the Villa Cup game, are Wijnaldum and Thiago. And I thought, given Wijnaldum's played probably more minutes than anyone this season, given Thiago's just back from an injury, I thought at best he might ask them to share that game. You know, the way he did with Henderson and Thiago,
yeah,
the recent Masters ago, 45 minutes each. Surprised they both saw virtually the whole game. I think both of their performances yesterday are no accident. I think Gini Wijnaldum is running on empty. And you know, running on empty isn't helped by a lack of confidence around you and your own confidence having to try and stay intact. And Thiago the same. I do agree with you. If Henderson is available, I would pull Gini Wijnaldum out. He'd be the one. Certainly one of those two, with a view to letting them have what I think would be quite a significant impact in a last half hour situation. I'm worried about Jordan Henderson. There's no proclamations, but can I give you... I have a suspicion, if I think he doesn't make the Tottenham game, that he's got COVID, and Liverpool are, again, not revealing it. But it's been a minor knock now for two games, but with no sign of an end in sight. I suppose that means we'll get him back soon enough, but who knows?
All right. Harriet?
I was just going to say quickly, I thought without Henderson there, there wasn't really anyone that took on the role of covering the defenders a bit more and sort of sitting back. And I think, I don't know if that's a reason why we did get caught out a few times, because there was no one sort of sitting a bit further back in midfield and able to sort of track back and be there, you know, if Reece Williams did get caught out with the ball going over him or, you know, missed a touch or whatever. And I think maybe that is, you know, what he does bring to the midfield that maybe Thiago and Wijnaldum just couldn't do yesterday or didn't do yesterday.
Do you think, Harry, if you had Henderson, what we haven't seen much of yet is the idea of Henderson and Thiago together in the heart of the midfield, because that's where I feel as though they can help one another. I think Thiago's very willing to battle, and I think you saw that yesterday against Manchester United. But his modus operandi is to think forward. So I think it would help if Henderson was there and was able to, that they can almost play as a little bit more of a two. That's what I'm really looking forward to seeing, if we could get Henderson back in, because I think it'll let Thiago remove a little bit of responsibility, but also then when he comes and helps out, he's helping out Henderson rather than being the first man on the scene.
Yeah, definitely. I think Henderson, like I just said, provides that bit more of security, and then it gives Thiago the opportunity to be able to push forward and be a bit more creative. And, you know, his passing ability, regardless of his match yesterday, we all know that his passing ability is there, and he has the ability to put these balls into the front three and you know, really hopefully make us score a lot more goals moving forward when he does sort of get his form back after yesterday. But yeah, I think playing the two of them together would be really beneficial in terms of you having that person there to sit back and help out the defenders a bit more, and then Thiago can sort of go, and we don't have to worry about Reece Williams or any other defender in that position getting caught out, because, you know, Henderson's there, and then Thiago can go and push forward, and he does, like you said, he does play more of a naturally attacking role. It's not in his sort of instinct to track back and to be that far back on the pitch. So yeah, I think it will be great once we can play them both together. And yeah, I don't know about Henderson, if he has got COVID, or I think they said a groin injury or something, but hopefully he can play against Tottenham, because I think the two of them together would be a lot more positive, yeah.
The Anfield Wrap is around right the way through for all the build-up to Tottenham, all the reaction to Manchester United, and transfer-orientated stuff. If Liverpool are indeed looking to do some business, we'll talk about that right now with Rob, with Paul and with Harriet. But it is available, theanfieldwrap.com/subscribe, to do that. Download the app on the App Store if you haven't already. You'll get some tokens, and we are working again to see if we can get some more tokens in everyone's account who doesn't currently pay the £10 level, and get all the audio and all the video. You can pick between audio and video, or you can have everything, and we're beginning to be able to get back outside filming as well, so we'll show you what the city of Liverpool looks like at this stage. Everything that you need there for you, theanfieldwrap.com. Moving on then, and talking about the transfer situation, the situation for those at the heart of the defence, first and foremost. Rob, a lot remains unclear, but what is emphatically the case is that we will be a lot better with a new one. I said at the start of this of January I'd actually like two, and I've got an argument around that, but ultimately, being fair to all parties, including Klopp and Edwards, the marketplace for centre-halves is a nightmare. James Tarkowski, for instance, shouldn't be a £40 million player. Lewis Dunk shouldn't be viewed as a £40 million player. In amongst all of this, if there's an area to look at back at the summer, letting Lovren go looks an enormous mistake, and getting a left-back in, especially one we haven't seen, doubles down on that mistake. It is worth pointing out that that's something that the online fan base and the fan base in general were very committed to for 2 years, the idea that Lovren had to go. In the end, we don't get very much money for him, and it looks like it's a difficult marketplace to go and get someone in who is as good at centre-half as Dejan Lovren.
Yeah, with hindsight, definitely, you wouldn't have let him go. That's an absolute no-brainer. I would say there was a split camps in coming in that last summer window as to whether a spying centre half was a priority or not. I think there was a number of people who thought, yes, we definitely need some cover at left back, but we also equally definitely need some cover at centre back. And Klopp was talking as though, you know, the Fabinho would be more than adequate. Matip, they think they you know, with a period of rest, they could get him fit. And of course, we had the regular two. And in that universe, it looked a rational decision. It didn't look insane. It doesn't look insane now. It's just something you wouldn't have done that way around. And I don't really want to dwell on whether Degsy's the man or not, because he's obviously better than the options we've got. Although his injury record wasn't far different from Joel Matip's, although I think Joel Matip's a much better player.
The one thing I'd say that's worth dwelling on, Rob, is there's a lot of very noisy people on the internet, and it's difficult to them because we don't get to sit in boozers, so on the internet matters, and it is a thing. And a lot of those people who are very noisy on the internet spend a lot of time being very noisy about the fact that Dejan Lovren was shite and should never play for Liverpool again. And it's very important that those people are emphatically told that they were wrong then, and they may want to rethink whether or not they could be wrong now, and they might want to reflect on their own processes and their own thinking around Liverpool Football Club. So I'm just one guy.
You are very much one guy. Neil, I'm there for you, mate. You're good. I fucking told you, you fucking whinging bastards. You slagged off Dex. He was better than you realised, you fucking fuck.
And also that left backs are not as important as centre backs.
And that too. Right, come on. You've had that catharsis, I understand, was needed. And yes, he was underappreciated and underrated, the big dog. Although his coming through this week and deciding that Liverpool miss him more than he misses them was absolutely perfect piece of snide by Dexy. And perhaps ugly his best and worst moment in and out of a red shirt.
I was absolutely delighted with it, obviously, but go on.
Of course you were. So where are we now with this centre-half conundrum? The more I've reflected on it, and you know, I've been part of the process of the entire Liverpool sporting world just dissecting what Klopp meant when he said, hey, I'm not the one who ultimately decides whether the transfer can happen or not. I just make my recommendations. I'm just one guy. Well, more or less, he said things like that. But, and then we're, you know, then a sane interpretation is, well, it's fair enough. There are the guys who at the end of the day go, if the money's not there, the money's not there. And Jurgen accepts it and we got to accept it. But there is a subtext to what he's saying. And I think the subtext is, I found someone, maybe two someones. I found them. And I did, and they weren't 80, 70, 80 million pound lads, because I wouldn't be that stupid as to present them to the ownership in a pandemic. I would have known that was off the table. I didn't do that. What I think happened, and I'm only second guessing this. And
you are second guessing it.
Well, but you know, it's all we can do, because the club, you know, they operate behind the curtain that they choose to work behind. I think he might have found, I'm going to pick a name because we were linked to him, Sven Botman or an Ozan Kabak, I don't know. And many of the many names we speculated about on the Gutter Show recently. He may have found one of them, and a deal may have been doable at a 20-25 and a margin at a price that wasn't insignificant, but also not out of court in his opinion. And I think he put it to them and went, I think we need to do this. And they've gone.
When you say he, do you include Edwards or Gordon?
Yeah, maybe those two as well.
Within your speculation, what I think is important, and you are speculating, but what I think is important, no, and it's fine, we can speculate, it's part of what we're here to do, but what I think is important, though, is that the one thing that's crystal clear from every piece of source material is that Klopp, Edwards and Gordon talk all the time. And Gordon is FSG's man. And I think that this is why I think Klopp, my reading of it is Klopp is trying to say to the wider football world, I'm not a fucking idiot. I can see we need a centre-half. There's just no fucking money. And I'm being told there's no money. I'm sure that there may well be things that are good to go, but he is saying there's just no money. I'm not an idiot. I'm almost bored of you saying to me over and over again, are you going to buy a centre-half because you need one? And I've got to go, well, you know, we've got to do what we can with what we can. I think he almost just got to the point where he wanted to go, I know we need a centre-half, but there's no money.
I think he said different things in the past, though, when he's
I think he's got bored.
I think he said different things when he realises something's not doable. So, like, maybe last summer, you know, when people would have liked to have seen Liverpool maybe show interest in Sancho or even Werner or Kai Havertz. I think he was quite relaxed with the fact that I understand that though their level, including the wage packet, is at a level, we just can't do that. And it's not like I'm saying let's do it. I'm not even saying let's do it. But I felt the subtle difference was he was saying I went to them and I knew about them. And I do understand the money, certainly to a certain degree. And I said, I still think we should do it. Because let's put it this way. It isn't a binary. We have the money or not, for a number of reasons. One of them is to do nothing risks a lot of money because we may not get through to the next phase of the Champions League. We may not finish high enough in the table to earn the big riches there. And we may not qualify for the Champions League next year. And that has a knock-on effect to many, many sponsorship deals as well. So inertia is not a non-financial option, right?
If I read the quotes from Neil Jones's goal piece, And he says, asked if anything from the last few weeks had changed in terms of the club's thinking around transfer, so he replied, no, nothing changed, sorry, short answer. Later he would elaborate on the theme. I'm not a five-year-old kid anymore, and if I don't get what I want, I start crying. Most of the time in my life, I didn't get what I want, to be honest. I'm responsible for a big part of this club, but there are people who are responsible for the whole thing. I cannot make their decisions. I know they are with us. I know they want to support us, and they do. Now we talk about a centre-half. Yes, it would help 100%. Would we score more goals with the centre-half? I am not sure. Would it give us more stability in specific moments? Probably yes. But it's not about that. We never, ever spoke in the transfer window like this, because that would be an excuse and we don't need that. What we have to do is improve the football in the decisive areas with this squad and not sit here and be disappointed or frustrated with some decisions. I'm not. Of course, we know what we would like to do in an ideal world, but the world is not ideal and not just for us. We have to deal with the situation. Everything is on the table. Everything is clear. We just have to work on the football stuff.
Yeah, you know, at the end of the day, you'd expect him to do that. I don't expect him to, even if he thinks they're wrong, you know, they could have stretched to 25 and it's a risk not to. I don't, even if he thinks that, I don't expect him to, as he sort of put it, cry about it. I don't expect him to do it. I expect him to go forward with positivity and not cause a division and not to not make it, because there isn't a parallel really with like the Rafa situation where he felt he had to go to war with the ownership. I don't think Klopp feels he needs to go to war. There are going to be disagreements.
There are, yes. What I don't think's clear from that, or what I find it difficult to find the subtext of within there, Rob, yeah, is this idea that he's nailed someone down at 25 million. I mean, I think in general, there's a really interesting... But what I mean is that, he's nailed someone down at what could be deemed to be a reasonable price. I mean, I think in general, like, there's other tensions within this. For instance, like, I cannot really drill into the list of centre-halves I would have. Like, I would already have Sokratis with a Liverpool scarf around his neck, personally, but I'm not Jurgen Klopp. And I refuse to believe that if Klopp went and said, to be honest with you, we can get Sokratis in for 6 months and he'll do this, this and this for us, there's no transfer fee, we're just paying him a wage. I don't think people would be, I don't think he'd be told no for that.
Agreed.
And this is where I think that part of my point here is that Liverpool have not, and I think there's two instances, one's Ranier Clave and the other one's Loris Karius, where Liverpool have tried to do a bit of short-term transfer smart-ass cleverness. One's worked there and one hasn't, from a Liverpool point of view, since Klopp and Edwards have been absolutely properly moving forward together when they've had a full season. That's the only time I think that's happened in terms of the short-term smart-ass clever sort of bits and pieces. Maybe Adrian as well, but that was forced on them because of Mignolet. So I think that they don't want to do that as part of all of this. So even there, this is an area where, for instance, I disagree with them in that I would have them get a centre-half in. One on loan, I'd have them get two in, off the basis of the fact that if you get two short-term options in, one for 4 months, 5 months, and one on loan, if one of them fucks up or, you know, breaks his leg day one in training, but you've got another one still, and he's just there to do bits and pieces and be better than Reece Williams, and be better than Nat Phillips, and with a bit of luck hit the ground running. But I think one of the problems here is if Liverpool are looking to still stick to their transfer policy in amongst their FSG running the club policy, it obviously gets very difficult.
Yeah, and I mean, there may be a degree of brinkmanship, you know, subtle brinkmanship Klopp has to feel, he has to play with his employers, in as much as if he signs up on the Sokratis dotted line too early, he doesn't get I'll keep using this name for an example, Sven Botman, who he thinks is a big deal. They've scouted him, right? So he thinks, if I sign up for Sokratis too early in the window, I don't get the centre-half I'd actually really quite like. So there may be a degree of internal brinkmanship being played there. I mean, there were some reports over the weekend that Liverpool's interest in David Alaba at Bayern Munich on loan remains. Although Real Madrid are the favourites, he still hasn't made that move or committed to them. Their interest remains, you know, Christian Falk at Bilt, who tracked the Thiago story superbly throughout the summer and was right, where everybody else, quite frankly, didn't get it as close to it as he did. He's saying Liverpool's interest in Alaba it remains. Now, of course, we may be watching another game, superb game of bluff by Liverpool, but we'll see.
Harry, the risk of not adding a new centre-back is massive. The key question, I suppose, is how good does this centre-back need to be? Are we? And there's two we's. One is Liverpool Football Club. The other one is, for want of a better phrase, the four people on this podcast. Are we happy with a very short-term option? My thing is that this just doesn't seem like this manager's MO.
Yeah, I think it's difficult one because the conversation you've been having is kind of, you know, if you bring in a centre-back, there's absolutely no guarantee that they're just going to work and they're going to slot into the team and they're going to need more time to sort of adapt. Like, I don't think you bring Socrates in and he's suddenly going to solve our problems. I don't think there's any chance in hell. And I also think you bring in another sort of young, inexperienced project player like Reece Williams, and there's no point doing that because you've already got someone like Reece Williams sitting on the bench who can sort of do the same job. So I just don't... I completely think that we do need a centre-back, but I think looking on the market and the options that are there, I don't think there's many people that are going to come in and just instantly make the situation better or just instantly adapt. I mean, players rarely do that or whatever. You know, Thiago's even taking a while to adapt, and he, you know, he's arguably one of the best centre midfielders in the world. So it's just a sort of more of a complicated conversation than just bringing a centre-back in at whatever standard and just making it work. So I just don't think it will. I don't think there's any point, you know, going back to your question, just signing someone on loan that, you know, that's not going to fit into the system. I think you have to, I don't know if there's much point bringing someone in on a short-term basis, and if players, you know, would even want that to happen. I don't know. I think the fan base has put so much, like on Twitter and everything, put so much on just tweeting, we need a centre-back, we need a centre-back, without actually looking into the intricacies of what that means and whether they fit into the system and what kind of player we actually need there to do a job, so...
In the summer, Paul, Pablo Mari goes from Flamengo to Arsenal for 7.2 million. Keanu Hoover goes from Liverpool to Wolves for 9 million. Mohamed Salisu goes from Real Valladolid to Southampton for 10.9 million. Same price for Dejan Lovren to Zenit St. Petersburg. Otamendi goes from Manchester City to Benfica for 13.7 million as part of the conversation around Ruben Diaz as well. In amongst all of them, Matty Cash, a right back, I grant you, goes from Nottingham Forest to Aston Villa for £16 million. You can go right the way through the list. It's difficult to find. Gabriel goes from Lille to Arsenal for 27 million. In amongst all of this, Nathan Ake goes from Bournemouth to Manchester City for 41 million. My point is that it's very difficult to firstly work out where a centre-back is pitched, but also secondly work out what's an appropriate price for one. And thirdly, that's even more complicated in a COVID landscape.
Yeah, and I think going back to something that Harriet just said then, and everyone sort of touched on, and your rant earlier, which I couldn't agree more with, I think far too many football supporters as a whole, Liverpool fans in particular, are just never ever willing to consider for a second the intricacies of these situations, the moving parts, the all of the different nuances you've got to discuss. I don't believe when you think about the different parts involved in this, I think there's three. You've got Klopp and his coaching staff, you've got the owners who have the cash and or not, and you have the team of analysts and people who are identifying footballers. Now, of all those three moving parts, we sort of already know what Klopp said, because he's not being shy about it for a change. We're not sure entirely what's going on between him and the owners, but I think one thing we can be certain of, to a certain degree, is what our analysts, our analysis and player identification boys and girls will be doing, which is they'll have found loads of players, I would guess. They'll have found a whole range of players, and they'll be saying to Klopp, here you go, here's 10. This one's free, and he's 34 years old, and he wants 150 grand a week. This fella's £50 million, and he's 24, and everything in between. And for all we know, because FSG are going to get the brunt of all of this now, but for all we know, FSG have said, you can have these lads. See, in the bottom third of this list, you can have any of them. And Klopp's gone, I don't want any of them. If you're going to make me have any of them, I'd rather have Reece Williams. And they've gone, okay. But these are moving parts. We can't sanction a signing of the higher end, because look at all the things you've just listed. You name some of those players. Some I haven't heard of. Some I'm saying, yeah, we could buy them, and it would satisfy everyone for 2 weeks until the first time they make the same mistake that Reece Williams made yesterday. And then what?
Socrates comes in. Socrates could have sliced the ball like Reece Williams did yesterday.
Of course he could.
Socrates could have flown in and got skinned by Marcus Rashford. I think Klopp might argue is, would he look quite as composed on the ball as Reece Williams looks, having played in training with that squad for quite some time now? It's really difficult, isn't it, if you think about it?
The one thing I'd say, Rob, the value of FSG is hugely... Sorry, the value of Liverpool Football Club's hugely increased under FSG, and they'll be, you know, at some point they'll sell the club. I don't think that's going to short to medium term, because I think that the policy right now would be a little bit different if that's the case, but that's a separate conversation, one for another day. But the value of LFC has increased hugely under Fenway Sports Group, and there is some sort of point where you just need to maybe buttress that a little bit, in that this isn't just a conversation about whether or not Liverpool can win the league. It's that top four, I think, is going to be, for every team, really weirdly, bar maybe City, a bun fight still. It's still going to be a scrap, I think, until the bitter end. And I accept that Liverpool's cash flow will be a shit show. Looking at the accounts of every team at the minute that are coming out in the COVID period, Barca's are the most recent, and yes, Barca's looked atrocious anyway last year, but they look even worse now. Real Madrid looking a mess. There's loans all over the place that have gone out to clubs. But I understand that so far the policy for Liverpool, Rob, has been not to get a loan from a bank or from FSG around transfers. That's been the policy, but there are exceptional circumstances where maybe you need to change a policy.
Yeah, I mean, bubbling around in the background, because we've been so focused on events on the field, rightly so, over the last couple of years, and in a different way at the moment, has been this this fundraising project involving Billy Beane and FSG looking to possibly float Liverpool FC on the stock exchange and crystallise some of their capital gain and get some money into the club. Now, a lot of that's that plan, which actually has an expiry date because they've raised half a billion, I think, for it, and they have to hand it back to investors. Not the Billy Beane consortium, if they don't do a merger with Liverpool within 24 months. But notwithstanding the detail on that, FSG don't just stand to lose the Champions League qualification money and all the other funds we talked about earlier if Liverpool aren't successful. That has a direct knock-on effect to the valuation of the club. Now, Liverpool are always valued, when they're talked about in financial articles, as being worth over £1 billion. That is a direct factor of the bottom line, of the profit. So there's a hell of a lot of knock-on effect here. And as I know you're implying, is they could take some of that gain that they've made from investing £300 million in a club that is now worth well over £1 billion and go, let's borrow against it, remortgage. Just not a lot, just a bit, just enough to get us over this hump. We've seen Tottenham do it. In a sense, they did do it in the summer. The Thiago and Jota signings, where they're paid for, I think it was reported upon very, very easy terms, maybe over the best part of 4 or 5 years. I'm not sure if it's quite that long. Maybe it was. That is a loan. Listen, to make no mistake, from the selling club. Liverpool could go that extra 9 yards, maybe borrow another 50, 100 million. I don't know, but I don't know the ins and outs. They may say, turn around if they listen to this, goes, geez, do you not realise we're borrowing 200 million? We're actually doing a plan to borrow 200 million just to keep us afloat in the next year. I don't know, but it feels like from a fan's point of view and from a not financially literate fan's point of view, it feels like they may be just taking a risk too many. I thought of an analogy. It's almost like asking a Formula One driver to go into his next race with 3 wheels, to go without any centre-halves. We have no centre-halves at the moment. Next to zero.
On the loan thing, Rob, the cash flow will be a shit show. We can see that from everybody else's numbers as they're coming in. And if they have loaned at some point in the last 6 months, FSG have loaned Liverpool money on a bridge basis, we actually may not see that in accounts until February 2022. It is worth sort of acknowledging that Liverpool did their accounts in February. They might state in those accounts, but I don't think they'd be obliged to, if I'm right in my understanding of it. If they have done that, they just need to declare those numbers when they declare them. But the one thing I would say is that ultimately there is, you know, there is possible, you know, for me, that's the thing I would do. And it is what I would do if I was the people running the club without having any additional information. That is what I would do right now around a centre back. I think it's reasonable not to do that, but it is what I would do. And I think that's a place to end this, is that it's worth saying there are decisions, but it is also worth saying that part of where Liverpool have got to where they've got to is because they've made the policy decisions that they've made, and they've employed them really, really well, and they've structurally pulled themselves into this position by making those decisions as well, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, there are parallels in this moment they are now, where in the summer of 2017, where we are all desperate for them to sign Virgil van Dijk, and that transfer doesn't happen initially for reasons which are well documented. And a lot of the fans were saying, just sign fucking anyone. We can't go into another season with just Matip and Lovren and whoever else was covered there in Klavan. They're just not of the standard we need. We're still conceding too many sloppy goals. Now, they took a measured view and said, we will get Van Dijk, it'll just take time. And if we have to sacrifice the defensive, the central defensive portion of the team not being as elite as the fans might like it to be, we, the manager and ourselves have discussed this, and we can get through this. And they may have that in mind at the moment, goes, they can get through it because it can't be perfect, and football isn't about the next month, it's about the next 3 years. But what I would say to them, in, on the very, very remote chance that they're listening to this, is this isn't then. This is acute. We have no centre-backs. Apart from Joel Matip, who is able to play on average one in every five or six games, if we average his appearance rate over the last 2 years, that's not enough. We may be facing Manchester City, it's quite possible, with Nat Phillips and Rhys Williams in 2 weeks' time. We don't know. It's quite possible. If not then a week later against league leaders Leicester. With centre-backs, one who played in the fourth or fifth tier of English football, one who played in the second tier of German football. It is not the same as 2017, where we made a reasonably measured, patient judgment. This is a squad emergency.
Can I just add something to that, Neil, before we finish? Because I want this. I think this is important. You mentioned before Klopp's MO, and FSG have got an MO as well. And I think it's important to say that both of their MOs have changed over time. We have seen them adapt their philosophies, and Klopp has acknowledged on numerous occasions, we live in a strange world right now. So if you can't change your MO that you've had before in those situations, when can you? And I think the other thing, there's two other things worth saying. One is, I can always imagine someone like John Henry sitting and listening to stuff like this and thinking, isn't it funny how I've become a billionaire by understanding risk and literally hedging it, and these dickheads think they can assess risk better than I can. I think it's worth acknowledging that. And at the same time, I think it's insane the risk they're taking here. Because again, you know, aside from any other season we've been involved under Klopp with this, we could get to the last game of the season, and I think by then, whoever's first and second will probably be away from the pack. Hopefully that will be us. And City, I would guess, but who knows? But I would say it's not unrealistic to say this season, on the last day of the season, between third and sixth or seventh could be separated by 3 points. You could be going into the last game of the season to either be in the Champions League or finish sixth or seventh. And for me, that's just too big a risk to take when you could just buy someone for 20 million quid. Taking into account everything you've said about the value of the club, borrowing money, in the grand scheme of things, it's not that large an investment for the risk that you're taking if you don't do it.
Okay. Harriet, pick me a Liverpool team for the game against Spurs.
Well, hopefully Matip's back in, so yep. Obviously you've got the defence there with Fabinho. I think, like we said earlier, I don't know, I love Wijnaldum, so I'm always hesitant to say that he needs a rest, but maybe he does need to have one game out, and you put Milner in there, or you know, you maybe ask Shaqiri to come in and play. And then I think the front three just go again. I'm really surprised we haven't seen any of Minamino in the last few matches, I thought.
Why do you think that is?
Why do I think he hasn't played?
Yeah.
I really don't know. I don't know what Klopp's reasoning is behind it, because I thought, you know, especially in the Crystal Palace match where we obviously won 7-0, he played well, and he obviously scored the opening goal. I think, I don't know if he just hasn't sort of gelled into the system, and they don't think he's going to do a better job than maybe, you know, any of the other front three, and there's not much point taking him out and just trying to see if he can come into form suddenly and score. I think we desperately need Jota back. I think we all know that, and hopefully, haven't seen anything about when it might be that he's back. But yeah, I think against Tottenham, you just have to go with the strongest team and just trust them to just try and
There's no Henderson, Harriet, who would you pick in midfield? Thiago, Milner, and who would be your third person?
I would put Wijnaldum in. I think, you know, I don't think there's anyone else that, I know he is a bit tired and he does look like he's sort of running on empty, but I still think he comes in and does a job, and yeah, I don't think there's anyone that I'd pick over him, I don't think.
Are we all, Rob, Paul, Rob first, the back four that we'd expected, presuming Matip's back, full fitness, the front three we'd expect, what are you doing in midfield? Feel free to argue with me if you want to, for instance, do Milner at right back and give Trent a rest, but go on.
I think I would take Thiago out. I think I would put Wijnaldum in the six, and I would play Milner and Curtis Jones. I would pray to God that Henderson is fit. He won't be, I don't think, for the reason I'm guessing at earlier. I don't think Naby Keita will be available either. So I would say, yeah, Wijnaldum, Milner and Curtis Jones with a view to getting Thiago on the pitch pretty early in the second half.
Okay, Paul, what are you doing? Again, by all means, say that you play Tsimikas at left back, or Milner at right back, or whatever. But what would you do that's different to what's been said?
No, I'm not changing either of those. The Tsimikas thing does make me laugh, which, especially in the context of the centre half thing, when we literally said we need someone to back up Robertson. Robertson's like, you don't. I'll never miss a game ever. For as long as football is played, he's one of those lads who it's like, just inject my foot with whatever you need to do, or steroids, wrap it up.
And we could be playing Minamino at left back. It wouldn't feel as exposed as playing Reece at centre back. No offence, Reece.
Yep. Go on, Paul.
Yeah. So all of that is the same. Midfield, I'll be. Rob has worried me with the COVID thing. I think something we could do without for the rest of the season is these injuries that people are just like, oh, he's just got a knock. The Jota one's the latest one. I thought Jota just had, you know, he was going to be out for a couple of weeks. And then 2 weeks ago, it's like, his leg's still in a brace. Like, when did they put his leg in a brace? Why have they started putting his leg in a brace? It wasn't that bad an injury, was it? No. So what's going on with that? The last thing we need is Henderson. If Henderson's not there, Rob's already said what I would do with the base in the midfield. I wouldn't leave Thiago out, but I'd say to him, you're not a six in this league, mate. You might have been able to play six in Spain and Germany. That clip of him, where I think he was chasing Greenwood for the one that Alisson ended up saving, and he started sprinting, and then he put his head back like the roadrunner, as if to go, this will make me go faster, and it didn't. It's like, that's not something I want to see again. I'd play Thiago further up the pitch. I'd put Gini Wijnaldum in the six and say to him, drop in, do your best Jordan Henderson impression, and I'd play Milner and keep his energy in there.
Okay, thank you very much indeed to Rob Gutman, to Harry Pryor and Paul Cope. We've covered a lot of ground on this one. I hope you've enjoyed it. It has been the Anfield Wrap after Liverpool have been beaten by Manchester United. I have had enough of not winning. Can we fucking sort that out against Tottenham, please?
Sports Social Podcast Network.